Welcome to This Old Tree, a show that features heritage trees and their human stories. You'll hear interviews with experts, historians, and regular folks to celebrate the myths and uncover the real tales. This Old Tree is sponsored by Schwartz Tree and Landscaping in Cranston, Rhode Island. Professional tree service, landscaping, and plant management. Visit SchwartzTreeCare.com or call 401-941-4440. Now, here is your host, Doug Still.
The year was 1796. A group of surveyors from Connecticut had come to the frontier just west of Pennsylvania to choose locations for new settlements. Their intent was to map the area south of Lake Erie and create a rough plan in order to sell lots to settlers back in New England. The survey group, led by Moses Cleveland, selected one site at the mouth of the Cuyahoga River that eventually took on his name. When Cleveland and his band arrived, they found a beech maple forest rich with towering oaks, chestnut, elm, and sycamore. Over time, as Cleveland and the surrounding townships grew, the forest was largely cleared. Flash forward to 1946, when the city of Cleveland was set to celebrate its 150-year anniversary, its sesquicentennial. Arthur Williams was a curator at the Museum of Natural History and an ecologist for the Cleveland Metropolitan Park Board, and he had an idea to honor the founding of Cleveland. Why not find 150 trees that were alive and sizable back in 1796, thus more than 150 years old, and designate them as heritage trees? And that's exactly what he did. With help and some good PR, he found them, 153 of them actually, dotted throughout Cuyahoga County. They were named the Moses Cleveland trees, and each was initiated with a plaque upon its trunk. The project got a lot of attention that year, and afterward, Arthur Williams hoped the trees would continue to inspire people as living links to the past. But you know how things go. Would this hallowed group of old trees become lost to time, development, and a changing modern world? Join me as I meet some members of a larger team that recently set out to find all these trees and map their locations. My guests Roy Larrick, Margot Apple, and Michael Malampi are here to describe their tracking efforts and door-knocking diplomacy. What did they learn about the Moses Cleveland trees, and will their historical legacy survive? I'm Doug Still, and this is This Old Tree.
This old tree, standing here for more than four centuries. Wonder what you'd say if you could talk to me about what it's like to be this old tree.
While I usually center my stories around the symbolism of a single old tree, I've got to say, designating a collection of heritage trees with a shared name and identity seems like a brilliant idea. As a group, these arboreal veterans have an extra aura, like they are part of an exclusive club. The upside is that they are appreciated across neighborhoods, with special pride shared among residents and landowners. But that regional distribution is also the group's downside, as some trees are more vulnerable to the whims and priorities of any individual landowner, as well as to the lack of any coordinated care. Some just get forgotten. Finding them again is like reuniting them in a way, bringing back their collective power and identity. There's something really cool about that. It makes me think of the Blues Brothers movie, when Jake and Elwood spread out across Chicago to find their old wayward bandmates in order to get the group back together. These Moses Cleveland trees are forever linked. The chief organizer of the project was Roy Larrick, a retired archaeologist with a second career in watershed science and advocacy consulting with Bluestone Conservation. He was a Paleolithic archaeologist, as a matter of fact, and I asked him what that means.
And that means basically it's got to be older than 11,000 years. It has to be part of the Ice Age. And so end of the Pleistocene, by convention, 11,300 or something like that. And if it's later than that, it is, you know, it's not in my expertise, basically. Yeah,
it's too new.
Yeah, too new. Right.
Where are some of the places you've worked?
I have worked in Southwest Europe. So France and Spain, a little bit in England, and a tiny bit in Italy, but France and Spain, basically. And I have had the great fortune of being part of excavation teams for a number of sites in Southwest France, cave sites that date anywhere from 450,000 years ago to 11,300.
But what brings you to trees?
Trees represent for me the most basic ecology that develops on top of the substrate, on top of either bedrock or, in the case of Northeast Ohio, glacial deposits. Okay? And they are, to my mind, the equivalent of the floral equivalent of megafauna that I have dealt with as an archaeologist.
He pointed to his appreciation of a book written by Jared Farmer called Elder Flora, A Modern History of Ancient Trees, published in 2022. It's an intellectual examination of how the world's oldest trees symbolize the best and worst of modern civilization, as it says in the book jacket. I went and got a copy.
For me, the trees are their elder flora. They represent, you know, the basic ecological associations, regional ecological associations that I can understand and most people can understand as well. So trees are the ecology, the basic ecology on top of the bedrock.
I see. When did you first become aware of the Moses Cleveland trees?
Clevelanders are generally aware of what we call Moses Cleveland trees, at least of a certain generation here. So the first Moses Cleveland trees were designated in 1946, and I'm a child of the 50s and 60s, so this was a term that you get taught, you tend to know if you're a Clevelander. My direct association with them goes back to 2019, when a friend slash colleague of mine, William Barrow, Cleveland State University Special Collections, retired and became the president of the Early Settlers Association of the Western Reserve. And that organization had taken up the Moses Cleveland trees in 1970 or 71, and had worked with them until 1986. And Bill Barrow inherited a number of files that were labeled Moses Cleveland trees. He didn't know what to do with them, and he asked me, as the most science-oriented person he knows, to look through these files and tell him what they were about, basically, what the value was.
So he brought this list to you. I'd love to get back to it, but I'd like to go back in time first.
Okay.
And ask you, who was Moses Cleveland?
Moses Cleveland was a resident of Connecticut back in the Revolutionary War era. He had been a general in the U.S. Army and had retired as a rather wealthy man, I believe. At least he became so. And he was part of this group called the Connecticut Land Company, which had put together back in 1795 about $3 million to purchase what Connecticut called its Western Reserve that had been given to the state by U.S. Congress in 1786. And the state of Connecticut sat on this for 8 or 9 years till they sold it to this land company. Moses Cleveland was a principal in that company, and he was hired as the chief surveyor.
So he was from Connecticut.
He was from Connecticut, right, and Glastonbury, I believe. So he assembled in the winter of 1795-96, 55 people. Some of them were trained surveyors. Many more had other skills like hunting. They were the provisioners for the group. There were all kinds of people who had simple jobs, axemen and chainmen who cut down trees and the like. In any event, this was a major push during the summer of 1796 to come to the western border of Pennsylvania and survey an area that was 120 miles long, that is from east to west, and about 50 miles deep from Lake Erie down to a southern border. And it was basically, Connecticut got the right to double itself west of Pennsylvania. There were, of course, Native Americans here, not a great presence because this was a buffer zone between Huron speakers in the northwest and Iroquoian speakers to the east. Each of those groups' influence trailed out in this area along the Cuyahoga River. So it was basically without permanent Native American settlements, but a lot of travel across the area.
Who are the indigenous tribes?
Well, it would have been the Wyandotte was a principal one. There were Ottawas. There were Shawnee. And there were, right along the Pennsylvania border, there were Iroquoians, Seneca Iroquoians.
So it was sort of an overlapping jurisdiction right where the Cleveland settlement began.
That's right. And to the south of this area, so to the south of the Lake Erie drainage and the Tuscarawas drainage, there were settlements. And for that reason, there were missionaries here. And there had been French missionaries earlier, and there was a group of Moravian missionaries in the Muskingum watershed, and they had some dealings here. You know, that was a small presence.
I see. How did these tribes respond to the survey group that came from Connecticut?
They did encounter some Native Americans, and they sent word out that they would be arriving to what's now called Conneaut, Ohio, the northeasternmost settlement in Ohio. And they spent some days there negotiating with a small group, I think less than a dozen Native Americans. And they came to one of these ridiculous kinds of contracts where for just, you know, a few score dollars in cash and some tools, some what we would call trinkets these days, and some whiskey, some barrels of whiskey, they would obtain this area, at least from the Pennsylvania line to the Cuyahoga River.
And so what did Moses Cleveland and his team do once they got to this spot? Like, how did they select this one spot?
Moses Cleveland and some of the principals had taken a land traverse from Connecticut across New York and into the little bit of Pennsylvania that sticks up to Lake Erie. This is where they set up these Native American, this conference, series of conferences. But most of the group in and all of the supplies came by boat from Irondequoit Bay, actually, or Sodus, New York. And so they had to traverse their boats up around Niagara Falls and into Lake Erie, and they met at Conneaut. There was a major storm on Lake Ontario when these boats were coming, and the boat that held the barrels of whiskey foundered, and they lost a lot of their daily grog ration.
Oh, man.
Yes, oh, man.
So they were not happy.
They were not happy. It was like a military enlistment, and part of it was a ration.
What was the forest like when they got there? Because obviously some of these trees that we're about to talk about were there.
You know, we know it as basically a beech maple forest region-wide, and it's an extension from New England across northern New York and into this area, and it actually goes into Michigan and I think goes up to Wisconsin a little bit. So beech was the principal tree. Sugar maple was second, but it was varied, and especially by terrain. So in the higher, more humid areas, beech and sugar maple dominated. On the slopes where it was a bit drier, oaks dominated. And then in the swamps, there was a combination of swamp white oak and pin oak that tended, and elm and chestnut, which are gone entirely.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it a closed canopy forest, or were there open areas that might have been cleared
It was closed canopy. I think we can say that. There has been some argument about this, that there were, that this area is, it's the, you know, southernmost point of the northern forest. It's the westernmost point of the eastern forest. And conversely, it's the easternmost extension of the prairie, the tall grass prairie. So there have been arguments that there were isolated prairies, and that, upon review, that doesn't seem to be the case.
So then the survey team finished up by the end of September?
Yes.
And then they went back to Connecticut?
Yes.
And then what'd they do?
They wrote everything up, and they graded the townships. That is, you know, better to worse. And then the Connecticut Land Company took over and formed basically blocks of land to sell that would have nicer and lesser townships with them. And everybody got a share, basically. And then they hired agents to actually sell land back in New England and out here in the frontier.
When did the city or town of Cleveland take its name?
Right then and there.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Moses Cleveland Tree Project leader Roy Larrick describes how the original Heritage Tree effort came about in 1946. I'm Doug Still, and you're listening to This Old Tree. Hello, I'm Doug Still, the host of This Old Tree, and I'd like to talk to you about Schwartz Tree Care. I've known owner Dave Schwartz for nearly 2 decades, and he understands how important your trees are to you and your property. He has 52 years of experience in tree work, and the crews at Schwartz Tree Care are trained to the highest professional standards. Schwartz specializes in natural pruning, but they offer all manner of tree and shrub care, including pest management, fertilization, landscape design, and installation. Every property has its strengths and weaknesses, and with this in mind, Dave works with you to develop a viable management strategy. They make your property look like it has never been touched. Natural, gorgeous, and sustainable. Arrange for a free estimate by visiting SchwartzTreeCare.com or call 401-941-4440. Schwartz Tree Care. Get the best for your property. Hi, I'm Doug Still, and we're back with This Old Tree. The sesquicentennial, which is a word that I just learned thanks to researching this. How did trees become involved in that idea?
It was a large celebration, and there were a couple of aspects to it. So Cleveland is 150 years old. For New Englander, that doesn't sound so old, but at the time, it was, you know, much more than a century. It was going to be the first really large celebration. And I think that a lot of this celebration had to do with the end of World War II. It was just a year after the war had formally ended, and the economy was just starting to grow. People were beginning to feel good about this area, which had certainly developed industrially a number of times very early on, but the war effort, the World War II effort, meant a lot of manufacturing for armaments and machines of various sorts. Okay, so there was wealth here, and there was a good feeling. There was a committee, sesquicentennial committee, and I don't know how they got in contact with Arthur B. Williams of the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, a forest ecologist there, but there rose this effort on the part of Arthur Williams to identify 150 trees that would have been present when Moses Cleveland was there. So they wouldn't have been seedlings or even saplings. They would have been decent trees. So they would be more than 150 years old. And as a forest ecologist, he wanted to see the range of forest species represented in this group of 150 trees. So he took over, and there were other ecologists, our Metroparks, our Cleveland Metroparks, is a very large organization that back in the 1910s began to establish hundreds and hundreds of acres of reservations. Okay, so the chief naturalist from that organization aided in this. And once again, it was Arthur Williams' idea to go out and get as many species of 150-year-old trees as was possible. And they ended up with 23. And some of them really aren't trees that grow that long in the forest, but they still were picked. And Arthur Williams knew himself at the end that by the end of the sesquicentennial year, that some of these trees that were in pretty poor shape, but still old, might be gone. So they did designate 153 just to make sure there would be 150 at the end of the year.
So they had 23 different species. What are some of the species that they chose?
The dominant ones are the oaks, which tend to be the longest lived around here. So white oak, swamp white oak, bur oak, various red oaks, black oak included, and sugar maples were quite represented because that is a dominant tree. Beeches, yes, although by that time, beeches were having problem due to urban disturbance. I'll back up to say that one of the more important things about these Moses Cleveland trees is that Arthur Williams wanted them to be either on public ways or quite visible from them. Okay, so that means that trees like beech that are sensitive to root disturbance were not often found next to public ways. Oaks tend to be more resistant to disturbance, especially certain ones. Hickories were pretty well represented. Several cucumber magnolias, getting down to the trees that are present in the native forest, but never really numerous.
Now, there's a sycamore that I read about.
Sycamore, right. Sycamore is a good one. Sycamores, I think there would have been more, except not too many are located near public ways because the public ways don't go through floodplains, which is the sycamore's preferred habitat. Typically, the Moses Cleveland trees were indeed forest trees in 1796. But the classic Moses Cleveland trees are those that the early settlers saw in the forest as nice trees, and they cleared around them. They left them in open areas.
So who was choosing the trees in 1946?
It was Arthur Williams and a man named Harold Wallen, who was the chief naturalist for the Metro Parks. They were in charge of it. The way they did this was to send letters to mayors of municipalities throughout Cuyahoga County to ask residents or knowledgeable people anyway, to identify trees.
So the Moses Cleveland trees are not just in Cleveland.
Cuyahoga County.
Once they selected the trees, what did they do next?
Each one was personally visited by Arthur Williams, who wrote a description, unfortunately not locating it as precisely as one would like 75 years later.
Right. For your purposes.
Yeah.
And do you have those descriptions in that file you were talking about?
Yes, we have those descriptions.
And you have them in your collection or who has
them? They are archived at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History.
And they included a plaque with each tree, right?
That's right. A plaque that was made of aluminum, about 6 by 8 inches. It's just slightly rectangular, and it had the standard Moses Cleveland tree, sesquicentennial of the city of Cleveland, 1796 to 1946, and then the species name of the tree.
So there was sort of a select group of people that were part of this quote-unquote Moses Cleveland tree club.
That's right.
And people, you know, a homeowner would say, oh, I've got a Moses Cleveland tree. I've got the plaque right here.
Yes. Oh, after the fact. That's right. Most people still to this day are proud of a Moses Cleveland tree on their land.
So there are 150 original trees plus three to make sure that they kept the number at 150.
That's right.
The number was added to over the years.
Yes, it was.
How did that occur?
Arthur Williams, at the end, was probably tired of this. He retired about 3 years later, never having done much more with the Moses Cleveland trees, except putting a few in his magnum opus, which is called the Native Forest of Cuyahoga County. He retired right after finishing that book in 1949, and then the museum itself lost interest entirely. So nothing was done with the Moses Cleveland trees from, let's say, 1946 to about 1970, when this group I've already mentioned, the Early Settlers Association of the Western Reserve, got interested.
That's who you belong to, right?
Yes, I was recruited into this group after I got an interest in the trees myself. Mm-hmm. So in 1970, they thought that they should inventory all 153 sites to see what was still around. They did. And this time around, it was not specialists. Okay, the knowledge involved the forests of trees was, I want to say, more limited. But they did go out and find the sites and at least determine whether the tree was there, if it was gone, when it had gone, under what conditions. Okay. And they brought this back and they found, I think it was 92 trees still surviving from this original 153. And they sat on this for some months or a year and then decided that they should continue the program of designating Moses Cleveland trees. And so over actually the next 20 years, they then sent out various groups to do several score at a time. And eventually, by 1986, they had added another 143.
I see. So it was sort of a slow-moving project that added trees over time.
That's right. There were bursts, you know, and the big burst came in 1976, the bicentennial of the country. And the biggest push, I think there were 100 trees actually designated in 1975, 1976.
The mid-80s then?
The mid-80s, once again, what happens with these organizations, you know, the leader retires and the interest wanes. And that's what happens here.
Although the Early Settlers Association published about these trees in two separate publications over the years, the project was largely dropped until 2019. President Bill Barrow handed off the stack of jumbled files to Roy, and his inner archaeologist, naturalist, and community organizer took over. The Moses Cleveland Tree Project was revived. In fact, he connected with a group already interested in the project, the Forest City Working Group, organized by Sustainable Cleveland, a program of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability. The Forest City Working Group grew out of an action item in the city's 2015 Cleveland Tree Plan, an expansive master plan for the urban forest. It included an idea to create a landmark tree program, and the Moses Cleveland Tree Project was suggested to be a good place to start. Kathy Len is Cleveland's sustainability manager, and with Forest City Working Group co-chair Courtney Blaschke, she had already started a fledgling effort. Roy joined in and helped lead the effort during the early years of COVID lockdown.
The common point there was the 225th anniversary of the city of Cleveland, which has a terrible Latin name that I can't tell you.
I can only imagine.
Yes, it's, you know, twice as long as sesquicentennial. So there was this common interest that this anniversary was coming up, and the sentiment with the Forest City Working Group and the early settlers was that this was the time to re-inventory these trees because they were falling.
A concern for these oldest trees and the trees, city's canopy in general.
And that, yes, that's right. This all ties in with a renewed interest in trees around the world, I think, certainly in this country and in Northeast Ohio, in the urban areas, urban canopy has dropped considerably since 1946 in particular.
According to the 2015 Cleveland Tree Plan, the city had lost about half its tree canopy since the 1950s. When viewed from above, the canopy cover was only 18%, a low number relative to other cities and less than one-fifth of what is possible. The city had been losing about 75 acres of trees annually. And while Cleveland represents less than 20% of Cuyahoga County's area, the broader picture is much the same. In the 2010s, the county lost more than 10 square miles of tree canopy, even as communities tried to build it back. The master plan expressed great urgency and the need for awareness and action.
When they started talking about the Moses Cleveland trees and the idea of inventorying them, I'm like, this is an amazing project. I'm there. It's a treasure hunt for like the biggest, oldest trees in Cleveland. Like, absolutely.
That was Margot Apple, one of the inventory volunteers. When we come back from the break, we'll hear from her and another volunteer, Michael Malampi, about what it was like out searching for these venerable denizens and what they found and what it means to Cleveland. We'll return with This Old Tree. Hello, I'm Doug Still, the host of This Old Tree, and I'd like to talk to you about Schwartz Tree Care. I've known owner Dave Schwartz for nearly 2 decades, and he understands how important your trees are to you and your property. He has 52 years of experience in tree work, and the crews at Schwartz Tree Care are trained to the highest professional standards. Schwartz specializes in natural pruning, but they offer all manner of tree and shrub care, including pest management, fertilization, landscape design, and installation. Every property has its strengths and weaknesses, and with this in mind, Dave works with you to develop a viable management strategy. They make your property look like it has never been touched. Natural, gorgeous, and sustainable. Arrange for a free estimate by visiting SchwartzTreeCare.com or call 401-941-4440. Schwartz Tree Care. Get the best for your property. Hi, I'm Doug Still, and we're back with This Old Tree. Margot, welcome to the show. Welcome to This Old Tree.
Thank you for having me.
Where do you work now, and what's your role there?
Yeah, I currently work at Cambridge University Botanic Garden, which is the Botanic Garden of the University of Cambridge in the UK. My role is on the curatorial team at the Botanic Garden. My title is Collections Coordinator. I guess I'll take a step back and talk about what a Botanic Garden is, because I think that's relevant to explaining what curation is. Okay. But a Botanic Garden is a documented collection of plants. And the key term there is documented. So that's what separates a botanic garden from a park or a display garden is the records that you keep on your plants. So for any given plant in a botanic garden, you know, we should be able to tell you first and foremost, you know, what that plant is, you know, if it's a red oak, if it's a white pine, whatever it is, we should be able to tell you what that plant is. We should be able to tell you where it came from, if it came from, you know, a nursery or if it came from, you know, this specific place in the wild where it was collected as a seed. All of that information, all of that metadata is captured in your Botanic Garden's plant records database. And so I help to manage that database. One of my key roles is assisting in auditing. So our collection differs from other museums in that we have a living collection, right? So things die, things grow, things proliferate, things happen at a botanic garden.
So it's amazing coming from the Moses Cleveland Tree Project. I mean, this is what you do. This is your specialty.
Absolutely. I mean, so before being at Cambridge, I was at Holden Forest and Gardens, which is an arboretum and botanic garden in Cleveland, Ohio, and Cleveland's where I'm from. And this is what I was the plant recorder for that institution. So I loved it. Like I absolutely loved like everything about plant records. I found it fascinating. I loved the inventory process. It just all clicked. And so when I was trying to remember how I got involved in the Forest City Working Group.
So that's how you came to the Moses Cleveland Trees Project, was through the Forest City Working Group?
Correct. So at the time, the two co-chairs of the Forest City Working Group. So in like winter 2021, it was Kathy Len, who works for the city of Cleveland, who's a fabulous person. And then Courtney Blaschka, who was the community forestry director for Holden. And I think she tapped me at that time. There's nothing better than like a big tree, right? Like just like there's just such a power to it. And just finding all of these different ones, it was a really fun February. Yeah.
Now, how did they train you to do that? Or did you kind of come up with the methodology? Or is it just as simple as taking a list and dividing it up?
They divvied it up by community or by like kind of city limits. So the Moses Cleveland trees are not just in the city of Cleveland, but in the county of Cuyahoga,
right.
In Cuyahoga County, right? And so I was given three lists initially. I was given a list for the city of Cleveland, proper Parma and Parma Heights, which are like just south, kind of southwest of the city. Each list had, you know, it was an Excel spreadsheet of, you know, a species name, say Quercus alba, a location, and some of them had like the DBHs that were measured in 1946, 1976, and 1980s.
For those who are wondering, DBH means diameter at breast height, which is how trees are measured, 4.5 feet above the ground.
Some of them had notes. The data was very, like, some of it was really good. Some of it was really sparse. Some of it was real detective work. Like, it was the case where, you know, it would say, on Esterbrook Playground. And you're like, well, there's no such thing as Esterbrook Playground in today, like today. So
right.
I went to like the archival maps of the city and found where Esterbrook Playground was, because, you know, there were situations where you wanted to say, okay, I think this is the tree, but maybe something didn't match. Maybe the DBH was smaller than it was in 1984. There were a few where you had to do some detective work. But for the most part, it was pretty straightforward. You know, you got an address and you drove to that address and you knew before even approaching that address.
I see it.
Yeah. If there's this huge canopy, you're like, oh my God, it's here. Or if you didn't see it, you're like, dang, you know, it's not here.
Right. Right. And so what information did you collect?
So I collected species first and foremost. So most of them were true to name.
How's your tree ID?
Oh, I love tree ID. Yeah.
We'd get along.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. Yeah. So I would collect that information. So taxa, I would collect where, and I would give an address, but I looked up like city parcel so that information is consistent.
Right.
So that city parcel, I try to take coordinate. I took coordinates on most of them. So GPS coordinates. I took the DBH. And then I would write any like conditional evaluation. So I'd say it's in good condition, it's in fair, it's in poor. And then I try to kind of qualify that information. So say, you know, significant branch dieback, you know, ivy up the crown, just anything that was kind of seemed pertinent to give somebody kind of a picture of what was going on with this tree. I took pictures of everyone too.
Which site that you visited was your favorite?
Well, I think I'm biased a bit because Lakeview Cemetery is just like, just in general, it is a absolutely gorgeous, you know, place just to be. You get a view of the lake from the higher elevations. You have people like James D. Rockefeller, Garfield, the President Garfield, Jephtha Wade. Like you have all these really prestigious, I guess, people buried there. And then you have 100% success rate or retention rate for the Moses Cleveland trees that have been there since 1946.
That's amazing. And it makes sense because very little changes in a historic cemetery. Things are stable, right? Over time.
Stable. You have a crew of arborists, or, you know, you have hired arborists who take good care of the trees. I mean, the crazy thing is though, Doug, like you have the, you know, the bole of the tree and then maybe 2 feet from it, a grave. And you're like, they were digging down 6 feet like right at the base of this tree. And yet here is this 300-year-old white oak with a, you know, 5-foot diameter, and it seems fine. Like, it doesn't seem like a skip to beat. In the summer of 2021, we led, or myself and Roy led, tree tours in Lakeview of the Moses Cleveland trees. So that was like,
oh, that's great,
part of the celebration.
What's the most fantastic tree in the cemetery?
One of the Moses Cleveland trees. There is this white oak there that I was introduced to first in January 2020 by the then like senior horticulturalist of the cemetery. And she showed it to me because it was her favorite tree on the grounds. And I'd been going to the cemetery since I was a kid, and I had never been to this part, and I'd never seen this tree, or at least I don't remember it. And it is just like such a presence. It's got a 5-foot diameter of a base. It's got these beautiful branches that kind of swoop down. And so when I measured it, it was 100 feet tall. And this was in the summer of 2021 or 2020. And it was 117 feet in spread.
Wow.
It's just massive. Like, yeah, it's just so beautiful.
They can really spread out in the open.
Yeah. And it's just amazing to see. So that, I mean, without a doubt, that is my favorite tree, possibly, like, period, end of statement. But
do you have any unusual stories of visiting someone's house or an interaction with, you know, one of the owners?
I had a few interactions. I remember one woman, she asked, you know, she's like, so who's taking care of this tree? And I'm like, girl, like, it's on your property. Like, that's how this works. Right. I'm like, I know it's like, cause you know that you have this huge tree and you have these boughs that go right over their house. Like, you know, if one of those went out, like that would be just your whole house. Right. And there's not, as you probably know, it's not cheap to maintain these big trees.
No, no. Maybe she was looking to, maybe she thought there was some sort of historic preservation funds for these trees. Maybe there should be.
I know. And I'm like, I wish there was something like that, because I feel like it would make people more inclined and not so like skeptical of these trees or whatever. But this was in February 2021. We were going around, so COVID was still very present. And so I remember one woman, we were looking for a tree. I think she was in Parma or Parma Heights. And so we went up to her door and kind of you go up to the door and then you back up, you know, as you do in COVID times. But she's like, I was like, I think there might be one of these Moses Cleveland trees. I explained the story. I was like, mm-hmm. You know, maybe. She's like, well, both my son and I have COVID right now, but if you want, like, just go around back and like look and see if your tree's there. And I thought that was really sweet of her.
Yeah.
To, like,
right.
Let these, you know, two trolling tree searchers just
right. We're not going to get near you, but knock yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah. People were very curious. One fella, he was like, I know the tree you're looking for. It's not here anymore, but I can give you, I have the plaque. And then you went into his backyard and you could see this new grass patch that was probably, you know, 5 feet in diameter. And so we took a picture of holding up the plaque in front of the kind of blank slate. But then he said, there was a second, this was a white oak. There was another white oak that was pretty large in diameter, not far from it. And he's like, I'm pretty sure that's, you know, an offspring of it, which was good to see.
I was also put in touch with Michael Malampi, another inventory volunteer in charge of finding Moses Cleveland trees in Berea and its surrounding towns, which is southwest of Cleveland.
Well, I'm a retired professor of biology. I taught biology at the undergraduate level for over 30 years, mostly at Baldwin-Wallace University in Berea, Ohio. And I taught ecology, evolution, a vertebrate natural history course, and then some courses primarily for non-majors that dealt with environmental issues.
When did you first become aware of the Moses Cleveland trees? Were they well known before this project occurred?
No, but I knew there was a retired professor of biology at BW who lived about a block away from me, who had one of the Moses Cleveland trees in his yard. and he had a plaque on it. And he sort of explained to me a little bit about how he got involved.
He was already, he was involved in the project?
He had applied to have his tree listed as a Moses Cleveland tree with this, I believe this is what's called Early Settlers Association.
I see. So he had this plaque. He knew it was one of them. And he wanted to make sure it was on the list and that it was located.
He was, he was responsible for getting his tree recognized as a Moses Cleveland tree.
And did you have a particular ecological interest in these trees as a professor?
I was interested in finding out what kind of trees were still with us, starting from the initial cohort was labeled, designated back in the 1940s, but then subsequent trees had been added at different times in the 1970s and 1980s. And I was just interested to see what kinds of those initial trees, which ones were still standing, which species seemed to have the greatest longevity, the greatest resilience, in other words, given that the environment around them was constantly changing and especially being increasingly urbanized in one way or another.
I asked him about his own interactions with residents.
And then I would have to ask permission, of course, from property owners to measure their trees and just examine the trees, if it still existed. I mean, the first step would be to contact the owner and say, do you have an old tree that might be a Moses Cleveland tree?
Were many people aware of what that even was?
Most of the people that had them on their property were aware. Yeah, the percentage that still had plaques was I'd say less than half of them still had plaques. Mm-hmm. But most of them were aware that they had an old tree that had been designated as a Moses Cleveland tree.
Right. So they were probably happy to tap back into this and have their tree recognized.
I wasn't able to contact everyone. But most of the people that I was able to contact were more than happy to let me, if the tree still existed, let me look at it. And some people who had lost their trees would explain to me what happened to the tree. In a couple of cases, I was just never able to find out if the tree existed or not because I wasn't able to get onto the property.
When the trees weren't there, according to the list, did you notice a pattern? Were they new houses? Was there, how would you ascribe the loss of these trees?
It varied a lot. Sometimes it looked to me like in the case of the tree I just described, the old tree had just died for various reasons. In other cases, there were clear indications of development having gone on.
Jumping back to Roy, I asked him what the data told him about the Moses Cleveland trees and about the Cleveland urban forest in general.
What became quite clear is the goals of designating Moses Cleveland trees changed quite a bit. Arthur Williams wanted to have the native forest represented by these trees. It was clear that some of these minor species could not be found anymore. From 23 species, it came down to, for these 143 designated by the Early Settlers Association, there were 7 total species represented, and 4 of those were oak species.
Wow, that's quite a reduction.
That's a reduction, yeah.
How many of the original 153 trees were remaining after you completed your survey?
I want to say 40.
Wow, approximately a quarter were left.
Latest figures are 77 trees, Moses Cleveland trees, out of the 296. There are 77 that still stand.
What do you think these findings tell us about how the urban forest is changing?
I'm going to recast that a bit and say how we are changing the urban forest, how humans are changing it, okay, and what we can learn from these. And I think the most important thing that comes from the Moses Cleveland trees, whether they're standing or not, is that the oaks dominated. You know, the oaks are the long-lived, nice-looking trees. Oaks grow to some extent everywhere, but there are areas that prefer one species or another, or to put it the other way around, there are places where a certain species of oaks can adapt well and others where those same species don't. If you step back and look at the associations, the normal associations of those oaks with other forest members, with other tree species, when you get to areas that have a good representation of Moses Cleveland oaks, you can reconstruct beyond the oaks themselves what tree species were there. Those patterns then become a guide for how we can reforest along more natural lines. Let's start the process by understanding what grew there prehistorically and what of those prehistoric species still makes sense to put there currently as anchors for an urban forest.
Why do you think so many of the trees were lost? Was it just development? Did Cleveland expand since World War II?
That's right, especially since World War II. But what has done in the bulk of the Moses Cleveland trees is road widening, underground utilities, and overhead utilities. That improvement, infrastructure improvement, certainly carried on through the 1990s. And only now, I think, are we starting to second guess that and to try to understand means for people moving around without the tyranny of the car.
Do you think this project, though, will help raise the profile of old trees in Cleveland and the surrounding area?
I believe the best way that we're going to do this is to take on for a third time, a third chapter, the designation of new heritage trees or legacy trees. And we're not sure what we're going to call these, whether it will be Moses Cleveland trees. I'm not sure because the trees we designate, not all of them are going to be those that are 250 years old, but they will be distinctive trees, those trees that are of species that we want to promote, those trees that are just those that people care about.
Sort of a broader heritage tree program.
That's right.
After working on the project, I asked all three guests what they thought the Moses Cleveland trees mean to Cleveland and the surrounding area.
It's interesting. They represent, to me anyway, a link back to the founding, if you want to say that, back to the pre-settlement conditions of this area.
It was really fun to see kind of the community a subsect of the community, you know, celebrating these trees and congregating around like our natural heritage in Cleveland. And that was really cool. And we had like a celebration on, you know, the 225th anniversary at Forest City Brewery. And it was just like a beautiful event where we were just there to kind of celebrate our natural heritage in Cleveland.
It's perfect that it was at the Forest City Brewery.
I know, right? But yeah, so there was that, which was just like very fun. And like the tree tours were a great opportunity to just like meet people from the community who are interested in the same things as you and to discuss, you know, tree stories. Cause every time, you know, you would talk about these trees, people would bring up like their big tree in their backyard or things like that. And if like, it just made me so badly wish for like a time machine to see what like the area looked like, you know, in the 1700s, in the 1600s, whatever. You see these huge trees that were probably just little saplings at that time. And like, it's just a world away, isn't it? And to like really celebrate the fact that we still have these little beacons of into the past.
They mean environmental stability. They mean that in the sense of desire more than statement of fact. You see an old tree, a beautiful old tree, and you think it's been there forever, and it's still there. And if it's healthy, it looks like it could be there forever more. So the Moses Cleveland trees represent once again, a kind of stability where it's lacking.
Great answer. Anything else you want to add?
Once again, trees represent elder flora. They are timeless. You look at them and you enter into tree time, so to speak.
Tree time, I love it.
Tree time, right.
The Moses Cleveland trees were ecological bellwethers for a shrinking tree canopy. At the same time, their remaining numbers have a symbolic legacy and point the way to a larger, healthier urban forest in the future. Clevelanders are already demonstrating the hard work and awareness to make that happen. I'd like to thank each one of my wonderful guests, Roy Larrick, Margot Apple, and Michael Malampi, for sharing their knowledge and experiences. I raise an inventory clipboard in your honor and to all of the people that organized and contributed to the Moses Cleveland Tree Project. Thank you, tree lovers, for joining me again today. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram for photos and updates and general tree stuff. The show's theme song is written by arborist Dee Lee. I'm Doug Still, and I'll see you next time on This Old Tree.
This old tree, standing here for more than four centuries. Wonder what you'd say if you could talk.
Thank you for listening to This Old Tree. This Old Tree is sponsored by Schwartz Tree and Landscaping in Cranston, Rhode Island. Professional tree service, landscaping, and plant management. Visit SchwartzTreeCare.com or call 401-941-4440.
Send them down a cool breeze, a sweet cascade. Tailor-made by this old tree.